Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me. I am Michelle Morris from Consolidated Planning Group. First of all, I really want to thank Nicole Crowder for inviting me to speak today and for joining forces with us to help educate the people that you work with. Thank you so much, Nicole.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
We're so glad to be here. So a few guidelines before we get started, just kind of the housekeeping items here. We're in webinar mode, and that means that I can't see you or hear you, but I know that you're out there. So if you have any questions or comments, please, I would really love for you to put them in the chat box. That is the easiest way for me to be able to see your question and respond to it. And I know, you know, kind of what slides I'm getting into, and if that question is going to be answered in the next couple of slides, I might just ignore it. But I promise I will get as many questions answered as I possibly can. And if not, you know, my email address is there in the chat box. The Consolidated Planning Group email and phone is there in the chat box. So if you have more questions or you want to set up an appointment with us just to kind of chat and have a consultation, it's completely free. So we welcome that. Again, I can't see you or hear you, so feel free to enjoy your lunch and snacks. We should be here for about an hour today. I am Michelle Morris with Consolidated Planning Group, and we are recording this webinar. Later on today, we are going to send out this webinar to your email. Hopefully you registered with your real email address, because that's where we're going to send the link to this recording. And we're also going to send the slides there. So I do a lot of work on these presentations. If any of the links in the slides don't work later on as you're going through them, feel free to just let me know. So first things first, I am with Consolidated Planning Group. And you might wonder who we are and what we do and why you should even listen to us. Well, first of all, we're financial advisors located just outside of Houston. Now, we serve families all across Texas and all across the United States. We have several families in other states already. And then as we grow and we add somebody from a new state, we are able to quickly go ahead and get licensed in your state, even if we don't have any clients there yet, and get things taken care of for you. So we've been doing this for over 30 years, licensed in investments, life insurance, securities, all of that kind of stuff. We also now are financial advisors who almost exclusively work with families who have a loved one who has a disability, whether it be intellectual or developmental, or any kind of disability or need that is different. So we are members of the Special Needs Planning Academy. We are National Social Security Advisors, and I have just earned the Chartered Special Needs Consultant certification from the College of Financial Services. So what I want to really put out there is that this is a very nuanced area. You need to know all the rules and regulations about how to set up accounts and what needs to happen for your special needs loved ones. And we do this every single day. This is not just, oh, that's just one of the things we do. No, this is our bread and butter. This is our life. This is what we do, is help families who have an individual with a disability plan for the future. So you are definitely in the right place. When people come to us for special needs planning, we help them with things like protection plans for the family. What happens if you pass away too early or live too long, or you become disabled somewhere along the way? Your family needs to be protected. We help family with lifetime care planning. You know, once you're gone, who is going to take care of your loved one? And what does that look like? And what does it cost? How can you get that all set up now while you're still here and make this transition that's going to happen when you pass away easier on your child? Transition planning is another big thing. When your child turns 18 and they are now an adult in the eyes of the law, when they graduate from high school, and now you're thinking about the next steps, those transition times are really big, important moments for your loved one. And easing those and making it easy as possible on you and on them is what we really strive for. Now, we can help you sign up for an ABLE account, of course, and help you understand how those work and what you need to know. But of course, we're also here to advocate for you and to educate you. There's so much that needs to happen. And sometimes you're hearing mixed messages. You might have a well-meaning family member who tries to tell you about planning for the future, or a well-meaning financial advisor, even who isn't specializing in this area. They might give you the wrong advice. So it's really important that you work with experts. There are over 263,000 financial advisors across the United States. But out of those 263,000 financial advisors in the US, fewer than 200 of them, not 200,000, just 200, fewer than 200 of them focus on special needs planning. That's less than a tenth of a percentage. So when you are working with us, you can rest assured that we know the real answers. We're not guessing. We're not telling you what we heard from so and so. We have done the research. We have lived the life. We have been in your shoes, and we know what we're talking about. So today, the topic is Government Benefits 101, and it's very important that you understand. And it's a lot of information. So there might be two or three items you take away from today's chat that are going to be very useful to you, and you can use them. And then maybe the next time you have some free time, because I'm sure you have so much free time on your hands. but the next time you watch this video over, maybe you'll pick up two or three extra things. And each time you watch or you join in any of our webinars, we just hope that you learn something new and something actionable that you're going to be able to use, because this is so, so important. So the first thing I want to talk about with you is the difference between SSDI and SSI, because these phrases seem very familiar, but they are not interchangeable. They are not the same thing. SSDI stands for Social Security Disability Insurance. Now, SSDI is what you get when you turn on your Social Security benefits when you are retired. That's retired in quotes, because it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to stop working to get your retirement benefits from Social Security. But when you, as a parent, turn on your retirement benefits, or if you pass away, your child will be able to get SSDI. Now, sometimes, just to confuse things, this benefit that your child is referred to as Childhood Disability Benefits, CDB. Now, for the past 40 years, up until about 2 or 3 years ago, they called CDB, Childhood Disability Benefits. They called that DAC, DAC. So some people still refer to it as DAC. Sometimes people call it RSDI, Retirement Survivor Disability Insurance. But all of these things, whether it be called SSDI, DAC, RSDI, or CDB, this is paid through the Disability Trust Fund. This is a benefit that is for workers who have paid into Social Security throughout their lives. You've paid taxes on your wages, and this is, kind of your reward, if you will, for a lifetime of work. It pays a benefit to a disabled individual who, even if they're unable to work, even if they've never worked, regardless of their income and resources. The benefits are for workers and for adults who are disabled, who became disabled in their childhood. You have to have insured status, which means that either you as the parent have worked enough to get the benefit for your child, or you as an individual have worked enough to get the benefit. So that is SSDI. Now, SSI, this is what your child should get when they turn 18. This is what they're going to file for on their own. And, here, the first half of this talk is really going to be focusing on the differences and the ins and outs of SSDI versus SSI. So, SSI comes from the general tax revenues, it is not from that same trust fund that the Social Security payments come from. This is a needs-based program, and it doesn't require anybody to have a work history to be able to get SSI. It pays disabled individuals who are unable to work and have limited income and resources. If you have too much income or too much in terms of assets, you are not going to be able to get SSI. Again, you have to be in financial need. You have to have limited income and resources. And we're going to go over exactly what those limits are. But yes, the asset limit is about $2,000. So I see some questions already coming in. I will mention divorce. I will talk about that. For SSI, yes, the person can work. We're going to talk about what the work limits are and what how they determine what you're still going to get. And there's one other questions in terms of who you can draw off of. Okay, great. So as we go through these, the questions that are in the chat are definitely going to be answered. So hold tight on those. Okay, so this is kind of what the timeline looks like with your loved one with a disability. They're diagnosed at some point in their life, hopefully before, age 18, definitely before age 22. But at some point you get diagnosed. Right when you have a diagnosis for your child, or actually maybe even before that, if you have any suspicion that there could be any kind of disability in your loved one, even if they were just born, please, please get them on the waiting list for the waiver programs ASAP. And we will go through that later on. So just hold on to that. But as soon as there is a diagnosis, call your local authority, that LIDA, that stands for Local Intellectual or Developmental Disability Authority, your LIDA. Some people say LIDA. I don't know how it's really supposed to be pronounced. I say LIDA. At age 18, your child will be able to qualify for SSI. Now, the reason they won't qualify before age 18 is because if your child is a minor, they're going to look at the parents' income and assets. And remember, those limits are very low. You can only earn a little bit of money, and you can only have a small amount in your bank account or own other assets. So if the parent is working and has more than $2,000 or $3,000 in the bank, they're not going to qualify. But once your child turns 18, you can control how much money is in their bank and plan for them to be able to qualify for SSI benefits. Now, SSI does come with Medicaid, that supplemental security income. It comes with Medicaid. So at age 18, your child can start drawing that benefit and can get Medicaid. Now, the best way to do this, of course, is that at age 18, you file for SSI, you get Medicaid, you're going along for a couple of years, and then the parent turns on their Social Security benefits, whether it be retirement or one passes away, whatever that looks like in your family. When the parent turns on a Social Security benefit, then the child will switch over to SSDI. They will turn off the SSI benefit because SSDI is typically much more. Now, if SSDI is not more, you might get some of each. That's not very common, but they might give you some SSDI and some SSI if the one isn't large enough. After your child is on SSDI for 2 years, 24 months, then they will qualify for Medicare. So at that point, your child will be off SSI. They'll be getting SSDI instead. They will have Medicaid because you turned that on at age 18, and they'll be able to keep Medicaid and they'll have Medicare. So they'll be dual eligible for Medicaid and Medicare. Now, here are some of the rules, what they're going to look for to determine whether or not your child gets these benefits. First of all, they have to have a physical or mental impairment. It can be both, but they have to have something. And they have to have a disability that is expected to last 12 months or eventually result in death. Many of the disabilities that our children have, these are things that are not just going to go away. These are things that are going to last more than 12 months. They do take into consideration your age, education, and past work history. And we'll get into what they're going to look at. And it has to cause the inability to perform substantial work activity. The way that they measure that is by how much money can you earn. If you can earn more than a substantial gainful amount, then they say that you're not disabled because you can earn that much money. So it's not truly hindering you from performing substantial work activity. So what is that substantial gainful activity? Okay, so for 2024, SGA is $1,550 a month. That means that your individual can earn $1,550 a month or less, and they can still be eligible for SSI. Now, if that individual is blind, they can earn more. They can earn $2,590 per month. Now, when you're applying for SSI, they're going to look at the SGA as a measure of your work when you're initially applying for it. When you're looking at SSDI, they use that throughout the entire life of the claim. So, how much can you get through SSI and SSDI? SSI has a limited amount each month that you're able to get. The maximum is $943 a month. That is for a person who is not working and is paying some of their housing expenses with the SSI benefit. So if your child is on SSI currently and they're not working and they're not getting $943 per month, you should talk to us because there are some ways, some things we might be able to do to help you get that full amount. Now, this is an area that really sticks in my craw, really irritates me. If you have a couple where both of the people in the couple are disabled, you would think that you would get $943 times two, but that's not the situation. You will only be able to receive $1,415 per month if it's a married couple where they both have a disability. Call your local congressman if you want to complain about that. So, when we're talking about SSI and SSDI, you have to be deemed disabled under the eyes of the Social Security Administration. So, in order to find out if you're going to be considered disabled, you can look at their publication called the Blue Book. This is a listing guide that lists out all different kinds of diagnoses and impairments, and it tells you exactly what you need to have to show that you have this a disability. For example, if you have IDD, they want to know that your IQ is below 70 or below 75 if you have other diagnoses. But you can look in the blue book, look under every diagnosis that your child has. And that will tell you what they're really looking for at the Social Security Determination Services office to make sure that your child has a disability and qualifies for Social Security benefits. We've also linked the website here for Understanding SSI altogether, so you can check those out. And like I said, these links will be clickable when you receive these slides later on today. So let me catch up with some of the chit chat and questions in the chat box over here. Cheryl, I hope I answered your question. She says, if my husband has turned on his Social Security at his full retirement age, does your child have to apply for SSI if he's already get SSDI if he's already getting SSI? So if the amount that your child is going to get is more under SSDI, yeah, you want to go ahead and switch over, but only after you have Medicaid in place. Because the thing is, and this is really important for everyone to note, if your child turns 18, even if they were receiving SSDI as a minor because maybe a parent passed away, or turned on retirement, you can get that benefit as a minor. Then, when your child turns 18, they're going to stop that benefit because your child is no longer a minor. Then you're going to have to call them and let them know to turn that back on because my child now is an adult with a disability and they still get SSDI benefits. But before you do that, you want your child to qualify for Medicaid because if you miss it and you skip that step, you go straight to, SSDI and waiting for Medicare, you might not be able to get Medicaid. So that's why for us, we always recommend that our clients, when your child is age 18, turn on SSI and turn on Medicaid before you turn on SSDI and Medicare. Okay. Now, whichever parent turns on their Social Security retirement first, your child should turn on their benefit under that parent's record. Later on, if the other parent turns on their Social Security and it's more, then your child can switch to that parent. Your child can follow whichever parent or step parent or adopted parent or grandparent, if they're under grandparents' care, whichever parent has the highest amount of income is going to get the child the biggest benefit. And so that's who they should follow. And yes, you can change that up as you go along. I'm keeping in mind that there are divorced people here. Can the individual work for SSI? Yes, we're going to talk to that. Megan, you can get SSDI and SSI if the SSDI amount is not greater than the $943, then what they'll do is give you the SSDI amount plus a supplement from SSI to make sure that you have at least the amount of what SSI is. How long does it take to get on the lists? You have to be a citizen or will just a resident work? On the list, like the waiver program lists, we're going to talk about that. As long as you have a social security number for the child, that is all you need. The parent is already on SSDI. What if the parent is earning $5,000 a month? Is the child 18 year old? Yes, your child's filing for SSI has nothing to do with your income if they're over age 18. They're not going to look at the parent income anymore. What can children under the age of 18? Yeah, what about us? I know we're going to get there. We'll tell you about what children can get under the age of 18. It can be an immigrant as long as there is a social security number. And I don't know how all of that works in terms of immigration law and when you get that number and all of that stuff. So all I can tell you is that if there's a social security number, your child can get benefits. Okay. Turn on SSI and Medicaid. Okay. So, Diana, this is the last question I'm going to answer right now. Diana wants to know, when you say turn on SSI and Medicaid, you apply, we just apply before they turn 18. No, do not apply for SSI benefits before your child turns 18. That's you led me perfectly to this next slide. That was so perfect. Okay, so when your child turns 18, you need to apply for SSI, and it has to be like the day of or after their birthday. Because if they are under age 18, typically they're just going to say, oh, no, you don't qualify because this is under the parent's income and the parent is making more than substantial gainful activity, which remember was $1,550 a month. Or, oh, nope, the parent has more than one house, more than one car, or more than $2,000 in the bank account. So those are the circumstances. Oops, those are the circumstances where you won't be able to get SSI. Now, when your child turns 18, you can make sure that they don't have more than $2,000 in their bank account, and you know how much they're working, so you would know if they qualify. You want to talk to your local office, the local Social Security office, and you can Google that. You can also start your application online. There's the website right there. And if you start online, they're going to save the date of your application on the day you start. And even if you don't finish for a couple days, and you know it's going to take months and months for them to process your application, they will backdate your payment to the day that you start filling it out online. So that's pretty cool. When you're filling out your application, you want to make sure that you have evidence that demonstrates the child's disability. And that's back here in this blue book link. So remember, if your child has autism, you're going to go to this link and look up autism and see what it says that you have to prove. And then, you know, you might be a little bit extra like we are. We recommend that you call your child's doctor and you ask for her records. And when the doctor sends over a copy of your child's records, you take a look and make sure that everything that is mentioned in that SSI blue book is in your doctor's records so that it truly shows that your child has this disability and has the functional issues that are caused by that disability that prevent them from working. So gather up your child's doctor's information, name, address, phone numbers, a list of your child's diagnoses, when they were diagnosed with those things, what medications they're on. Now, if your child is working, they're going to want to see pay stubs to make sure you're not making too much money. And if your child has a bank account, they want to see bank statements to show that you don't have too much money in assets. So that's some of the stuff that you should be thinking about when you're getting ready to start your SSI application. Now, after you apply, a few things are going to happen, and it can be kind of frustrating and worrisome. One thing that often happens behind the scenes is that when you call or you go online to apply for SSI benefits, they're also filling out an SSDI application for you. So you're applying at the same time for SSI and SSDI. Now, hopefully, I've just educated you enough to know that you might not qualify for SSDI when your child turns 18. And you don't necessarily want to. You want SSI first. So what we have found is that many of our clients are pretty quickly, after they apply, getting a letter saying that they've been denied. And they panic and they call us and they say, oh my gosh, Michelle, I've been denied for benefits. What the heck is crazy? And then I say, okay, slow down, take a deep breath, and look at the very top of that letter again. Does it say SSI or does it say SSDI? Because it's quick and easy to turn you down for SSDI. That's not what you need anyway, so don't worry about that. Now, this decision to get your SSI, it can take 6 months or longer. A lot of people are seeing a full year, but again, they will backdate that check. So that worries some people too, because, okay, we're not allowed to have more than $2,000 in my child's bank account, according to the SSI rules. And now they just transferred $20,000 into my child's account. What are we supposed to do? Don't worry. They understand that situation. And as long as that money is moved out of your child's account within 9 months, they won't count it against them. Now, that is only for that money that they give you as a back payment. Okay, so don't, that rule does not apply for all of the money. Now, after you turn in your application locally, they're going to send it to Austin to the Disability Determination Services. And you can call them. They will actually answer their phone. And you can ask, you know, who's in charge of my file? Do you have all the doctor's records that you need? Is there anything missing? How can I help you process this file? And they will work with you. One good thing that they do is they have something called a compassionate allowance list. You can look that up here. And basically, if your child has a condition that is on this list, they call it a presumptive disability. They just presume that your child is going to qualify if they have one of these things. And here's kind of some of the items on the list. But if your child has some of these things, then they won't take quite as long. It'll still be a while, but not quite as long to get their SSI benefits. And that's things like total deafness, total blindness, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, stroke, bed confinement, that sort of stuff. Okay. So if your child has any of these disabilities, their application might go a little bit quicker. Okay. So what if my child is working? How does that affect their SSI benefits? Well, here you go. Here is the equation that they kind of use to see how much money your child will get if they're working and earning some income. So in this example, let's say your child is earning $1,200 gross monthly earned income. The first thing they do is take off $85 in exclusions. So subtract $85 off the top from whatever amount your child is making per month. Then you're going to divide that number in half. So that brings us to $557.50 in our example here. Then you're going to take the full amount, which is $943, subtract the $557.50. And that is how much money your child should get from their SSI benefits, $385.50. So that's how that equation goes. Now I see that we have a whole lot more people who have joined in since I started the webinar. So just let me reiterate, yes, we are recording this. Yes, we will send you the slides and we will send you a link to the recording. And any questions or comments that you have, I am going through the chat box and I'm going to get to as many of those as possible. First, let me talk about the student earned income exclusion, and then I'm going to return to the chat box and see what's going on over there. Okay. So if your loved one is under age 22 and they're getting SSI benefits and working, and they're also in school, they are allowed to earn a little bit more money. That's because they're in school and they're working. So they give them a little break. You can earn more money. You have to ask for the student earned income exclusion. They're never just going to offer it. They're probably not going to think about it. They're not going to say, oh, your child is on SSI and they're in high school. Are they also working? We can give you a student earned income exclusion. No, they're not going to ask you about that stuff. So you have to ask for it. Your child has to be regularly attending school. That means 8 hours a week in college or university, 12 hours a week for grades 7 through 12. Or if they're in a training course like tech school or homeschool or some kind of certificate program, 12 hours a week. Okay. So again, yes, you have to ask for that. I'll leave the slides here for a minute. Is CHIPS the same as Medicaid? I think it is one of the Medicaid programs, but for children, for under age 18, our family needs Bobby Lee, I can't quite understand. Our family needs an AR for care. I have supplement. You know what, Bobby Lee, if you would not mind reaching out to our office, I'm not quite sure what your question is, but I'm interested in answering it for you and making sure that you have all your SSDI and all of that, and the waivers and all the information you need. Do you have to have a power of attorney or guardianship to apply for the adult child? No. They know that you're dealing with children with a disability, and they don't really ask about whether or not you have guardianship or power of attorney or anything like that. And if you do need any of those things, we can refer you to an attorney who focuses on special needs topics who can help. Now, there are two places that you can have money for your child if they're on SSI benefits. We're going to get to that. One of them is the ABLE account, and one is a special needs trust. 529C, a 529 college savings account, will be counted as an asset against your child. A 529A is an ABLE account that would not be counted against your child. We're going to get to that. Will there be an ABLE account? We're going to talk about ABLE. Okay, so Janet wants to know what happens if you move to another state down the road? How does that affect your child's benefits? So the SSI and SSDI that we've already been talking about should not be affected if you move. You do want to still let your new Social Security office know that you're there, but your benefits should not change because this is a federal program. Now, in terms of the waiver programs that we're about to talk about in a little while, those would be different if you change states. Do you have to live in the United States to receive SSI? Yes, SSI is a federal benefit for people who live in the United States. If you move out of the country or leave the country, there is a rule, a time limit. If you're out of the country for so long, they're going to cut you off until you move back. I don't remember though if it's 30 days or 60 or 90. I can look that up for you and let you know at another time. Okay, and the last question that I'm going to take right now is there a deduction for SSDI if you're working? No, SSDI is not based on, you don't have to have any income or asset limit for SSDI. So there's no exclusion needed. You want SSDI, you can, that's based on how much you've worked. Okay, so that's a different program. Okay, so let's keep going. And we'll get to more of these questions. So the Red Book. If your child is working, the Red Book will give you guidelines on employment-related provisions of Social Security. So you can go look up more information about working while you're receiving SSI in the Red Book. And I don't think that one is a clickable link, but it's easy enough for you to just type in your browser. Sorry about that. Okay, so child support. Unfortunately, divorce is extremely common in situations with a disabled child. It's very sad, but it's very true. And a lot of times you can get child support to last beyond age 18 because of the disability. And in that situation, when your child turns 18, if they're still getting child support, that will be counted as an asset or income for the child, because this is money that is belongs to your child. So what you need to do to prevent that from affecting your child's benefits is to make sure that the child's support is redirected to a first-party special needs trust. There's two different kinds of special needs trusts. Everybody should have a third-party special needs trust if you have a kid or a loved one with a disability. Now, the first party comes in when your child has money of their own that they need to put away so that Social Security doesn't count it against them. And that's where the first party trust comes in. So the first party trust would be for things like child support. If there was a settlement, maybe where your child was injured and there was a lawsuit and your child gets a settlement, that would need to go to the first party trust. Or if grandma and grandpa leave money to the child, and they don't know to leave it to the third party special needs trust, they leave it outright to your child. That would also go into the first party special needs trust. The thing with the first party is you want to use that money first because you use your first party's trust money and your ABLE account money first because those funds can be taken back by Medicaid. Medicaid can come and claim reimbursement for your first party trust and your ABLE account. Money in the third party special needs trust would not be touched by Medicaid. Okay. So it's way easier if you're in the process of getting divorced to make sure that this information about child support is in your decree. If not, you can go back and have your attorney amend your decree and have the judge sign off that that money needs to go to the first party special needs trust. So for SSDI, the thing that, or RSDI or DAC or CDB, that thing that your kids get when you turn on your Social Security benefit, they have to be over age 18. They have to have a disability that started before they were 22 years old. They have to be the dependent of an insured worker parent, cannot be married. Again, it's very frustrating to me that the government has written things into the law that punish you for getting married, but that's just how it is. If your child gets married, they will not be entitled to your benefits from your Social Security. And you cannot have previously performed enough work activity to earn that $1,550 per month. If it's maybe 1 month or two, they'll overlook it. But if it is for a year, they're just not going to ever be able to get the SSDI benefit. So when you turn on your Social Security, your child will draw half of the amount that you're getting. So let's say I'm going to use round numbers here. Let's say you as a parent get $4,000 a month when you turn on your Social Security. Your disabled child will be able to get 50% of that. So they'll get $2,000 each month. You still get your $4,000. It doesn't take away from you. They get their $2,000 a month. Then, after they've been on that benefit for 2 years, 24 months, they will be eligible for Medicare. So they'll have, hopefully, at that point, dual eligibility, Medicaid and Medicare. Now, when you pass away and your child is drawing from your record, they'll go from 50% to 75%. So now they'll be getting $3,000 a month, and they will get that money for the rest of their lives. So it's really important to go through the exercise of maximizing your Social Security to make sure that your child gets the biggest benefit that they can. And sometimes, honestly, it's even better to turn on your benefits before you even hit full retirement age, because by turning on your child's benefits early, your entire family could end up with even more by turning on your benefits early. And we can help you figure that out. Now, there does come a point where you hit the family maximum, and it's something like 180% or 200% of the working parents' record. We can help you figure all of that out. It's no questions about what the family maximum is. I don't know. It's like 180%. But again, we do the software that helps you figure all of that stuff out. Okay. US citizens, this is good to know. It's not for immigrants. Thank you, everybody, for putting answers in the chat and helping me out. There's so much going on, and there's so many fantastic people here. Does the child, so the child's benefit will always go off of the parent's full retirement amount, even if the parent hasn't hit that year, that age yet. Okay, so you as a parent might not be getting your full retirement amount, but your child's benefit will be based off of that full amount. How do we switch 529B to 529A? What you mean is C for college. It's easy to roll over a 529C account to 529A. And I will get to that. Okay, so what you want to do, what is really important, is to make sure that your child's money is in the right buckets to prevent them from jeopardizing their benefits. The way that you make sure that you're protecting their benefits is to make sure, first of all, that their name is not listed as a beneficiary on anything that would leave them money. For example, life insurance, investments, retirement accounts, bank accounts, anything like that, where you have a beneficiary listed. Most people would say, okay, yes, my life insurance is going to go first to my husband. And then after my husband, it will be distributed equally between all my kids. That's what most people do when they sign up for those accounts. But what happens if your child gets that money, all of a sudden they've got far too much in assets and they won't get their benefits anymore. So you have to make sure that you leave those things not straight to your child, but to their special needs trust. And make sure that your family members, grandma and grandpa, aunts and uncles might want to leave money for your child. Make sure that they know this rule as well, because you can have money in a special needs trust. Your life insurance and everything can flow straight into that special needs trust, and it's not even a taxable event. Money flows tax-free through life insurance to your heirs. And you can also have the ABLE account. So ABLE accounts, we're going to talk about these for a bit, and I did see some questions in the chat about the ABLE accounts. The beneficiary is the account owner. You have to have a disability that started before age 26 in order to have an ABLE account. Now, they do not need records, they don't need medical records. They just need you to sign and check a box that you're signing stating that, yes, this individual does have a disability that started before they were 26 years old. None of our clients have ever been audited. Knocking on wood, don't let yourself be the one who gets in trouble for that. The income earned in the account, because you put money into the ABLE account, this is very, very similar to a college savings plan, except that rather than only being able to use it for educational expenses, you can use it for pretty much anything that your child needs. So you put money in, they take out a fee, of course, up front, and that's your maintenance fee and management fee. But then the rest of that money, they use it to purchase mutual funds. So your child has mutual funds and it earns income. That income that the account earns is not taxed. So this is a tax-advantaged savings account. Unfortunately, the federal government does not let you deduct contributions to your ABLE account from your taxes. Your state government might allow it, but here in Texas, there is no state income tax anyway, so you don't need to worry about that. Again, it will not jeopardize Medicaid or other benefits to have an ABLE account. This year, for 2024, you can have $18,000 in your, you can put $18,000 into your ABLE account. Next year, the amount is going up to $19,000. You never ever want your ABLE account to go above $100,000 total. Now, that amount does not change each year. The amount you can put in per year changes. The $100,000 does not change. So don't forget that. If your child's working, they can put in additional money up to the amount they earn, but not over, what is that amount? $14,580. Okay. As long as you use the money for anything that can be construed as achieving a better life experience, that's what ABLE stands for. As long as it can be you say this is for my child, it helps them achieve a better life, you can use the ABLE account to pay for those things. If you have a 529 college savings plan, you can easily roll that into an ABLE account. We can do that for you. We can open an ABLE account for you. If your child doesn't use all of it and they pass away, Medicaid can come back and claim reimbursement for the funds that they have paid for your child's expenses. And they can come back and claim reimbursement from the ABLE account. So, more importantly, and this is always kind of a sticking point, you can use the ABLE account to pay for food and shelter. You can get cash, you can pay for clothing, anything really, transportation, financial services like what we do, education, computers, food, vacation, legal expenses, technology, anything that your child needs, you can pay for from the ABLE account. This is a save to spend account. It's not like a retirement account where you're saving for like 30 or 40 years. This is like putting away money so it's not in their bank account, so it doesn't count against them, and you can use it for what you need it for. Now, when it comes to the special needs trust, there are two really major differences. The special needs trust had limitations on what you can use it for. You can use it for almost anything. That's what this slide is just showing. You don't have to really read all those things. Your special needs trust can pay for most things, except this is the important slide. You cannot use the special needs trust if your child is receiving SSI for rent, mortgage payments, real estate taxes, utilities like gas, water, electric, homeowners insurance, if it's required by the lender, condo charges, cash, food. Housing, food, cash. You cannot use your special needs trust for those, or else you will cause a one-third reduction to your SSI benefits. Now, if your child is already on SSDI, you don't have to worry about this rule, right? Because they're not going to be getting SSI anymore. They're on SSDI. The other main huge difference between the trust, the special needs trust, and the ABLE account is that on the special needs trust, you can put as much money in there as you want, and there is no Medicaid reimbursement. The trust can have as much money as you want, no Medicaid reimbursement, but you cannot use it for shelter and food. The ABLE account, there is a limit on how much money you can put in there, but you can use it for almost anything. And there is the Medicaid reimbursement clause. So we always advise families that you should start planning now. Now is the time. It doesn't matter if your child is an infant or in middle school or high school or an adult, you need to start planning now because the sooner you start, the more of an impact you can have long term without making huge, giant changes, right? We also want you to think about what's going to happen after high school. There are educational options, vocational, recreational. There's even community, residential communities available. But you want to check into these things early, learn about them, tour the campuses or the community or whatever it may be, and see how you feel because there could be a wait list. And we always recommend that you make careful consideration before you just say, oh yeah, Jacob's sister Susie is just going to take care of him when they get older, when I'm gone, because Susie's going to have a job and she's fine. And well, maybe at that time, Susie is going to have her own situation going on, her own career, her own family. Maybe she'll have kids with their own disabilities. And she might see taking care of her sibling as something that she is kind of forced into. Whereas the child who is being taken care of has seen his sister as a sibling and a friend for all these years. And now all of a sudden she's trying to step into a caregiving role. They might feel a little bit of resentment there. You know, you're my sister. You're not my mother. You can't tell me what to do. I've seen that situation happen both ways. So just be very, very careful when you assume that a sibling would make a good caregiver. Okay. So I'm going to kind of speed through these last few slides so that I can get to the rest of the questions in the chat box. And now would be the perfect time if you have any leftover questions to get them in there. So we do webinars 2-3 times a week on various topics that are helpful for your family. Things like the special needs care plan, future cost of care estimates, the waivers and ABLE accounts, special needs trusts, and what you need to know about residential living communities, guardianship, and even what is available beyond high school. When you click this link, it will take you to our website events tab. And on that tab, we have all of our upcoming webinars. So you can register for them ahead of time. And then that way, even if you can't make it on the day when we're hosting it live, you will still receive the email that has the slides and the link to the webinar. And then you can watch it later whenever you have a chance, all in all of your free time. We also put all of our webinars onto our YouTube channel so that you can check them out later. So this is our entire team. We have 4 advisors and 5 team members who help with all of the background stuff. We're members of the Academy of Special Needs Planners. We're National Social Security Advisors. I am a chartered special needs consultant, and we are located just outside of Houston. We're an independent firm, which means that we are not tied to any one large company. We can choose any partners to help handle our clients' financial situations that we want. We also work as a collaborative team so that all 4 of the financial advisors on our team are working on your file if you choose to work with us. We do offer a completely free confidential consultation. You can talk to the company owner, Allison, or me, or my husband, Andy, and pick our brains. Have a chat with us. Ask us whatever questions I might not get to in the chat box. Ask us what the next step is for your child, for your situation, and we're happy to answer those questions. Once we answer your questions, we're going to want to know more about you and your family, and we're going to tell you about us and how we work, what we charge, how the process is working with us. Now, I would love for all 61 of you who are here right now to schedule your free consultation, and then we don't have to reach out to you to ask if you want it done. You can use the QR code to schedule. Or if that's not your style, you can call our office or email our office, and we'll get you scheduled for your free consultation. There's also links to our social media down there. These are clickable when you get these later. Okay, so let's see what else I can find in the chat box. What if dad purposely leaves something to the child individually to cause problems? Well, you know, let me know. Go ahead and schedule your consultation so we can dig into what he left and what can be done about that. If somebody leaves something to a child, it can always go into the first party special needs trust. It's not the most ideal place for her money, but it's better than just having it in a bank account or something like that. Let's see what else. If my child is not determined to be disabled by Social Security after they're 18, will he lose the money in the ABLE account? No, we would just have to roll that money someplace else, remove it from the ABLE account, and dissolve that. But we could put it into something else, no problem. Please, please share our information, share the information from the website, from the All of it. Share our information. Anyone who you know who might need our help, we are here. And if you need anything, you can reach out to me. And the last question here, Amy, can you move money from the special needs third-party trust to an ABLE account? Yes, you can move money from the trust to the ABLE account. You can move money from the bank account to the ABLE account and from the ABLE account to those things. All three can work in tandem, like your own fun little monetary pyramid. And they can all be attached online through bank accounts and the magic of the internet. And just tell, the ABLE account to put money there and the bank account to put money there. It all works out smoothly. So again, I hope that you have learned something today, that it has been useful, and that you call or email me if there is anything that you still have questions about that I can answer for you. I did put my email and our office email in the chat box at the beginning, but I'm going to go grab all of that and repost it so that I can make sure that you have the information you need. And then I'll give you a couple seconds to capture it. And then I'm going to say goodbye because it's the end of the time. There's a question about if it's an irrevocable trust, will that affect the ability to move that money to the ABLE account? It shouldn't, because your trustee should know that an ABLE account is a good place to move money from the special needs trust. So that should be fine, Renee. Okay. Well, I hope that you enjoyed it. Please let me know what questions or comments or feedback you have for me. And I hope you enjoy your week. Bye, everybody. Have a great day. Thank you. Thank you all for being here today. Bye-bye.